This program is provided by a trusted partner of the church and is educational, inspirational, and uplifting. It does not necessarily represent the official position of the church.
One night, it was as though the words in my mind were a validation that this is the right project, it is the right time, coming from Joseph. Thank you for doing it. And by the way, it's about time.
That was Larry Miller, always a little bigger than life.
So many times, being involved with Larry was, you could say it was a lot of things, but you could never say it was dull. He certainly had a way of living life large and doing things that counted.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Channel now presents the Joseph Smith Papers.
KJAZ Television, in cooperation with the Church History Department of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, presents this weekly series highlighting the research of scholars and historians as they prepare for the publication of the Joseph Smith Papers. And now your host, Glenn Rawson.
Tonight will be our last hour with you. And concluding as we are the Joseph Smith Papers television series, well, we thought it was fitting that we give you an overview of the whole project, the books, the website, and the television series, the past, the present, and on into the future. And of course, undergirding every worthy endeavor such as this one is the reason why it exists in the first place.
Ronald O. Barney.
The transfer among the Latter-day Saints of culture from one generation to another generation is something that we do not really explicitly talk about that much. Parents raise their children to raise young boys and girls so that they are able to stay away from the things in life that would do them harm and injury, to prepare them for adulthood without unnecessary baggage that comes from not living the commandments, etc. Well, what they're doing as part of that is actually transferring the culture. You can transfer money, you can inherit property. You can, in many ways, create a platform for succeeding generations to have educational opportunities, religious experiences and opportunities that seem to be inherited. It's something that you pass down. You go to some trouble to make sure that your children have the same kinds of opportunities or better opportunities than you do. We sometimes think that the culture, our heritage, our past is transferred by osmosis. That just because we exist, we inherit what happened before. And that is simply not the case. There must be a mechanism to make that transfer, or it will not take place. Latter-day Saints are not the only ones who recognize the importance of this transfer of culture. For 30 years, beginning in the 1930s until their completion in the 1960s, two important historians, a husband and wife team, Will and Ariel Durant, produced a multi-volume series called The Story of Civilization, taking the history of man from our earliest civilization into the modern era. At the end of the completion of the 11 volumes that they produced a little small volume, a summary volume, entitled The Lessons of History. And after all they described in the several thousand pages that they produced, on the last page, the last paragraph, the last sentence, they say, if a man is fortunate, he will, before he dies, gather as much as he can of his civilized heritage and pass it to his children. I see the same kind of thing happening for the Joseph Smith papers. People in the future will be reliant upon them as a touch point for their connection to Joseph Smith and the foundation of the restored gospel in the latter days. One of the remarkable things that Larry H. Miller did for the Latter-day Saints, not only today, but for succeeding generations, is to ensure that the prophet Joseph Smith, the full scope of Joseph Smith in his life, in his environment, in context, the panoramic view will be perpetuated for future generations. Not just for our children, but for our children's children's children, and on and on. Of course, the Joseph Smith papers were initiated really even in the 1960s through the work of Dean C. Jesse. The work that Dean Jesse did was of his own accord. He was the primary mover behind what was published. It wasn't until the end of the 1990s that the Joseph Fielding Smith Institute for Latter-day Saint History at Brigham Young University took it upon themselves to assist Dean Jesse in the completion of his project. Once the project was up and there was a feature of structure and visibility to the project at Brigham Young University, the church archives of the Church Historical Department became involved. And as we in the Church Historical Department began to offer assistance and help, providing source material, access to the documentation that that underlies all of the Joseph Smith papers, we were not fully prepared to merge both entities, BYU and the Church Historical Department, and perhaps lacked a little vision of how we were going to do that, other than to recognize that we needed something else. We needed some fuel to ensure that this project was going to take off.
Larry H. Miller.
Well, in a situation like my involvement with the Joseph Smith papers, it's hard to know where to start and where to stop. But I think the most appropriate place to start would be when a friend of mine named David Brown got called to be the Visitor Center Director. He and his wife, Mel Ray, got called to be the Visitor Center Director in Kirtland, Ohio. And he had just finished a stint as mission president in Boise and felt he knew virtually nothing about Kirtland, the Kirtland history. So he called the church archives and history department and asked for an expert to give him a crash course on Kirtland history. That would have been in January 2001. The response he got back was from a fellow named Ron Barney, who was very involved in the history and archives in the tall church office building there. And he responded with the assignment to give David Brown his crash course. Ron Barney said to David, you're welcome to bring a few people with you, maybe 10 or 12. And so it was that on January 30th, 2001, David Brown and a few of his children who were in Utah going to school and their spouses, Gail, my wife Gail, and I got invited to that too because of our close friendship with David Brown. And we went to see a presentation from Ron Barney in the church office building of some mostly writings of different kinds, books and papers relative to the Kirtland era. I thought, boy, this is exciting. I've always liked and appreciated church history, and this is a rare opportunity, maybe a unique opportunity. So I went there with some anticipation. We showed up at a room that would probably house about 60 people. I call it the Relief Society room because it reminds me of one. But Here is a large wooden table with a number of books and papers laid out on it. And as we walked in, it was hard to miss those because it was quite an array of them. And it was Ron Barney to greet us in white gloves. And as I mentioned, a group of about a dozen of us. And we sat down on or near the front row to listen to a presentation from Ron. He suggested that he had about an hour to do that. As it turned out, we commandeered about 2 hours and 15 minutes from him, plus a little personal time after that. Kept him a little late that night.
I had never met Larry Miller prior to that time, though I, of course, knew him by reputation. He sat on the front row, leaning back in his chair with his arms folded across his chest. With his legs folded, he never said anything. But I could tell that he was very interested in what was being described to him, these original manuscripts, which included the original manuscript of the Book of Mormon.
And I had no idea when I first approached the table what was on it. But as I sat down right on the front seat, there was about a 30-inch aisle between me and the table. I was looking at a stack of papers that were the closest document or books to me. It was a stack, as I recall, about an inch thick, that turned out to be the actual manuscript of all that the church has of the Book of Mormon. This is the original manuscript. It's not a printer's copy or anything else. And as that sunk into me, I realized that this day was going to be much more special than I had ever anticipated if nothing more happened from that point on, just because of what it was that I was there seeing. It just blew me away. I had no idea how to put it in perspective, its historical significance, its spiritual significance to me, to the church. I didn't know how to put it away. My mind was just swimming. Ron then proceeded to go through a presentation of probably an hour and a half or so, talking about what these books and records were. There was the 1832 Journal of Joseph that was written in Kirtland, which is special, I believe, in that as Joseph's life went on, most of his writing was through scribes, and this particular journal was largely, or if not totally, in his own personal handwriting. And then there were copies of various books, the Book of Commandments and various iterations of the Doctrine and Covenants and the Book of Mormon and so on. But it was just a mind-boggling array of what was there. But frankly speaking, after seeing the text of the original text of the Book of Mormon, everything else kind of took a little bit of a back seat to that, even with its individual historic significance on all these other books and documents. I don't know what could trump the Book of Mormon.
He came up after the presentation and he said, "We need to talk." And I said, that would be fine. I'd be happy to chat with you.
Gail S. Miller.
That's the way Larry is. If he wants to talk with somebody or meet somebody, he just goes and does it. He'll call cold turkey and say, can I meet with you or whatever.
And so we set up an appointment, and he came to my office on an afternoon within that week.
And I sat down, and we kind of exchanged pleasantries and stuff for 5 or 10 minutes, and finally said, "What can I do for you?" And I said, "I don't know why I'm here. Do you?" And he looked at me and he says, "No, I don't." He said, "You asked for the meeting." I said, "Yeah, I know." So we talked a little bit, and I said, "You know, I can't zero in on it, but it seems like it's got something to do with a project that you, Ron, would be involved with, or at least from your vantage point with your relationship in the archives, a project that you could see that either for political and or economic reasons, or maybe other reasons, wasn't moving forward the way it should be. Is there anything like that going on in your life, Ron, that you think that comes to mind with me having said that?" And he said, "Well, it could be so-and-so's work on this, and maybe it's this." And I think he named 4 or 5 prominent church historians and projects they were working on. But nothing really stuck with him or with me at that time. About 3 or 4 days later, I called him back and I said, "I figured out why I was there." And his response was really interesting because he said, "So did I." And I said, "Great, I'm going to come see you again."
The next week, we set up an appointment, and he came to my office, and we, as he walked down the hall, I greeted him, and I could see that he was approaching my office with a feature of confidence, and I also had come to some conclusions that had become very apparent to me.
And it reminded me a little bit of two kindergarten kids who were in a fight. Now, you hit me. No, you hit me first. No, you go first. Anyway, he and I debated that for 30 seconds, and finally we decided that I should go first. So I said to him, "It seems to be about Dean Jesse's work on the writings of Joseph Smith." And he said, "You're exactly right." And so we had both had the same sense and sentiment about that, and both come to the simultaneous conclusion that that's what we ought to be engaged about.
And I gave him some detail about the Joseph Smith Papers project. And I described the initiation of the project with Dean Jesse, of the involvement of the Brigham Young University Joseph Fielding Smith Institute for Latter-day Saint History, and its director, Ronald K. Esplin.
I knew a little bit about Dean Jesse, partly because I had read some of the personal writings of Joseph and was quite taken by those that he had published. A friend actually gave me a limited edition, I think number 65 of 200, beautiful leather-bound, gold-leafed edition of that book. I said to him, "You know, what would we need to do to be able to give Dean additional resources?" Not even knowing what those resources might be, whether it was human resources, financial resources, or whatever, to give this project a little bit of a shot in the arm. So Ron said, "Well, I have to think about that one a little bit. Let me do that and call you back."
After those initial meetings with Larry, as the scope of what we were contemplating broadened, a meeting was set up, I believe, for March of 2001.
I met Ron Esplin, Ron Walker, and Steve Sorensen. And so we had those three gentlemen plus Ron Barney, and I've referred to them that night and now as three Rons and a Steve. And sat down with these people who were all heavily engaged in church history projects, and I think at that time each of the three of them had some significant focus on the Joseph Smith papers, or wanted to.
Ronald K. Esplin.
That evening was pretty remarkable. We sat down expecting that he was interested in our project and might help us, but didn't have any sense of how this might unfold, other than Ron Walker, who was my research director for the Joseph Fielding Smith Institute, and I was the director. He said to me, "Ron, you handle the introduction, the overview, all of those things, but when it comes to the close, you let me do that, because you just won't be bold enough." And so we went through that and did exactly what Ron suggested. I did most of the talking, set the stage.
And my question to them was, in order to accelerate this project, still get it done properly, but in order to accelerate it, what do you need to bring this project to fruition?
And Ron jumped right in there. And he said something that Larry never forgot. He says, "Larry, this is the church's Manhattan Project." And Larry used that term several times in the years afterward. It stuck with him.
I suggested that their requests were more than reasonable. They were someplace between conservative and ultra-conservative. So I said, I'll do what you're asking times 150%, and let's see where that gets us in the next couple of years.
And that, of course, was much... We didn't know what to expect, but we didn't expect that. To have the first night we meet a potential donor, embrace the project, be convinced its priority is important enough that he's willing to throw his hat in the ring and go to the Jazz game an hour later, having made the commitment.
He made financial commitments at the time that left us looking at one another and saying, "Wow, what just happened?"
From that point on, Larry was intimately involved with the project. They relied on him for his business expertise and his ability to guide them in I almost to give them permission to bring people on and to increase the scope of the project. Not that he had power over it, but that he was acting as an advisor.
I think we were a little naive at the time, because I don't think anybody at that table, any of the five of us, understood what the scope of the project would ultimately become. Because the notion at that time was we'd have at least nine books. The mission was at that time to have the set released in 2005, the 200th year of Joseph's birthday. And in order to accomplish actual publication and release in 2005, they told me that we'd have to be have all the texts approved and edited and so on by December 31st of 2003, and go to the printer and publish the set in 05.
Now, the backstory that I didn't know until some years later is that Larry had a long interest in history. It's not like businessmen don't read books or businessmen can't be history buffs, but somehow, knowing the public Larry, I didn't realize, I wasn't prepared for the commitment he had to history. He'd already been engaged in helping seminary teachers, for example. This was his commitment to young people again, helping them have an experience on four-wheel driving the Mormon Trail in Wyoming, so they could go back to the classroom and tell people with more conviction and more understanding of what that experience was like. But that pioneer saga, which he had studied, read about, cared about, used in his teaching, just hadn't reached back to the roots of Joseph Smith and early Mormonism in New York, Ohio, and Nauvoo. And several personal experiences in late 2000 and early 2001 moved him in that direction.
I remember feeling for a few years in the early 80s that I was being prepared for something and kind of thought it was one big thing and not knowing what it was. When it had been a couple of years, I have to smile, it had been a couple of years that I'd gotten in, after I'd gotten involved in the Joseph Smith Papers Project, that it really struck me if there were one significant thing above all else, it might be this.
The church likes to be in control of their own destiny. They have people, they have competent people, and find whoever they need to do whatever they need to do. So for Larry to step into this project without being asked is really a tribute to him that they allowed it and accepted it and actually embraced it. And I think that means that they really respected him and they knew that he would not do anything that would put them in a bad light, and especially with the Joseph Smith Papers program on TV. I don't think they've ever done anything like that before. And I think that's a real tribute to how they recognized Larry.
Since I've been involved with this, I have become attached to the project in a way where I almost feel like one of its co-fathers, because for me to say its father would be patently unfair to all the people that have already put so much work in, starting with Dean Jesse and three Rons and a Steve and all those people, and many others, that it's a wonderful team that has evolved to do this.
But it didn't take many opportunities to discuss church history and Joseph Smith together before we felt not like we were the scholars and he was the donor, but we were brothers in a common passion. And we had an understanding that this was important and a shared understanding and conviction that together we could do this. That he could supply what we could not do and we could supply what he could not do. But together we made a great team.
I have had experiences, maybe numbering four or five or six, where I've been there late at night reading manuscripts about him or words from him, things that he's been involved with, feelings he had, where I had felt very, very strongly that this project that we're about with the Joseph Smith Papers, A, was the right project to be working on, and B, a project whose time had come. And on these occasions that I've referred to, the four, five, or six, I'm pretty sure that those feelings were coming from Joseph himself. And I don't mean to make light of it. In fact, just the opposite. But one night, it was as though the words in my mind were a validation that this is the right project, it is the right time, coming from Joseph. Thank you for doing it. And by the way, it's about time.
And coming up after this break, the project takes off.
And it came to me that some of the major scholars of Joseph Smith over the previous generation were also advancing in age. Some of them were in their late 70s. And so we decided, I said to Larry, it would be a good idea to get these men out at the sites where Joseph Smith lived his life and to download their brains on site and have them at the Joseph Smith farm, have them at the Harmony, Pennsylvania site where the gospel of Jesus Christ's power was restored, the Aaronic priesthood, have them in Kirtland at the temple, have them in Nauvoo with the backdrop of the Nauvoo temple and the backdrop of the homes that remain from the Latter-day Saint presence in Nauvoo in the 1840s, and tell us what they knew and why they knew what they did. I believe it was Larry who said, contemplating the trip to the sites that we associate with Joseph Smith, why don't we include all of the Joseph Smith paper scholars, not just the handful of senior scholars, but let's include all of them. Some of our people, of our very young scholars, had, and some of the people who were involved in our production scheduling, had never been to church history sites. It wasn't very long until after that Larry's notorious generosity kicked in even further, and he said, let's include all of their spouses as well. We ended up with almost 100 people. This became a great venture, one that we had to prepare for. Initially, we decided to do a series of interviews in the conference center, in the studio at the conference center. I conducted the interviews of almost 36 of our Joseph Smith paper scholars to serve as kind of a preface of what we were going to do to capture the overview of the project and what we contemplated in the future.
Among those interviewed in 2006 was Larry Miller himself.
I've become attached to those people and the project, but I think even more to have Joseph Smith Jr. be in my life as consistently as he is. I've got stacks of stuff to read about him still that I'm handed by different people. People will give me this to read that's 2 pages long, and this that's 40 pages long, and this book, and so on. But the culmination of that over this so far 5.5-year period for me has been just an ever-increasing understanding and subsequent respect and love and sometimes even awe for what he did and what he was. Ron Barney has made some really great points to me about Joseph, one of which was that sometimes, as members of the church, we have a tendency to deify Joseph, and we ought not to do that. He was not deity. But his specialness as a man is, in my opinion, unparalleled for anybody that ever walked this earth save Jesus Christ himself.
It was in October of 2006 that the much-anticipated Joseph Smith tour finally came to pass.
Interestingly, at this very time, even though I know that it had been happening before that time, Larry's health began to decline to the point that he decided at the last minute he couldn't go. His family came with us, his wife and his children, but and their spouses, but Larry said, I can't do this. which was an enormous disappointment to us.
When we went on our church history tour, his health didn't allow him to accompany us, and he wanted in the worst way to be there.
But we carried on, and we took this entourage of nearly 100 people for nearly 2 weeks, flew them initially to the East Coast, beginning in Boston, and worked our way westward, filming our Latter-day Saint history scholars at the sites where they described some of the significant events that occurred in the life of the Prophet Joseph Smith. We gathered more landscape footage. October was unusually cold. We had expected beautiful fall autumn leaves and instead found very demonstrable hints of winter. We weren't able to do some of the things that we wanted to do because it was so cold. But altogether, we filmed 112 presentations during this two-week period of time. Well, it became pretty evident that we had gathered some important material. And while we didn't accomplish all that we wanted to, we had enough that we recognized that it would be a shame for all of this just to go into the archives. And even before the trip was completed, there was a feeling we ought to do a documentary about Joseph Smith from this. Let's do a 2-hour documentary, public broadcasting system style documentary about Joseph Smith. Well, after the venture, it became apparent that we could do a lot more with that, and some of the people involved in this project, Dennis Lyman, one of the videographers, and Larry discussed the idea. We could do a television series about this. And it just happened to be that Larry Miller owned a television station. And so the conception of the Joseph Smith Papers on Television was hatched. And beginning in the fall of 2007, after a lot of preparatory work, a television foreword was created. A 1-hour kind of an overview of the papers and of some of the people involved in the papers was shown on KJAZ television, Channel 14 in Salt Lake City. That was just the preface, the foreword, to what we contemplated as being a weekly series. And beginning in March of 2008, the last week of February 2008, we rebroadcast that initial television foreword. And then beginning on the first weekend of March 2008, we began to show the Joseph Smith Papers television program. Our first season, we did one show every week for 52 weeks. We had not a very big crew. This first season, we did an overview of Joseph Smith's life. We started with his birth and with the early experiences of the Smith family in New England, in New York, and we concluded with Joseph Smith's death in Carthage, Illinois, in June of 1844. And the television series was packaged and sold as a documentary series.
Toward the end of the first season of the show, Larry Miller invited the producers of the show to his home and from his wheelchair asked them to go on.
We went on. We created a season two. And in it we explored and discuss different aspects of Joseph Smith's life on a broad range of things about him that we think fit very well into our overall project of trying to portray his life. It was interesting as this project continued, as we started to near the conclusion of our first season, we gathered a number of our scholars and invited an audience, a live audience, to join us in the little theater of the Conference Center on February 20th of 2009 and did a question-answer forum. We took questions from the audience to our scholars. It wasn't a prepared thing. We went in hoping for the best. It was that afternoon that Larry Miller died.
By the time Larry became ill, he was like a member of the family to many of us. We'd shared experiences in his home and he in our offices and with our people. But I think all of us thought, in spite of the suffering Larry is going through, he's got good medical help. He's got a supportive family. Gail is organizing her whole life around his medical requirements at that point. He's going to make it through. He won't be able to do everything he might have if he was totally healthy, but we're going to be a team. And soon after the first of the year, it was clear that things were not going well. When I met Larry in the hospital just a couple of weeks before he died, on three different occasions, people came into the room as we were talking. In each case, he introduced me to the doctor, to the nurse, to the therapist, the physical therapist, and said, "This man represents my legacy. The Joseph Smith Project that we've done together, the papers, the website, the TV series, this is my legacy." And he said it in a way that was kind of shocking to me because I wasn't ready for a legacy. And I wasn't ready when I learned 2 weeks later that, in fact, he was gone. I knew we'd miss him. I felt an emotional loss as a friend, as a counselor. He was more than simply somebody who handed over a check and said, "Do the best you can with it." He helped us figure out how to do the best we can with it and advised us in helpful ways. He had the kind of understanding that made him very invaluable. And so I knew there'd be a loss in terms of the project, even though Greg has been very supportive, even though I knew Gail had been a partner with him throughout this. Not having Larry as a counselor was a loss. I wasn't prepared for how deeply the personal loss affected me. It still does.
Marlon K. Jensen.
For a year, I've carried Larry Miller's obituary in a copy of my scriptures and was just noticing that he passed away. The anniversary of his death is the 20th of February. And I must say, it's been a year of adjustment for the Joseph Smith Papers Project. Larry was a large part of the life of that project, not just in the beginning, but throughout. He had such an interest, such an energy, such a passion, really, for it. Driven as he was in many things, this was the ultimate driver for him toward the end of his life. And we've had to adjust, and it's been wonderful to see his very able wife, Gail, step up and begin to exert leadership, and his son, Greg. But still, we've really missed Larry. And I think about the desires he had for this project, the desires he had to make Joseph Smith known all across the world. He took the little phrase from our hymn, "Praise to the Man," that millions would know Joseph again, Brother Joseph again, and did his little Larry Miller twist on it, which was that billions would know Joseph again. That was Larry Miller, always a little bigger than life, and he wanted this to be bigger than life. So the impetus he gave, the financing he provided, the influence that he exerted, this program has been a tremendous boost to many. I would say at least at this point, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, coming to know Joseph Smith better than they had.
Thank you. Larry saw himself as a bridge builder, and that's the role he played for us. The role was to supply for people that have the right ideas and the right resources, except for whatever's lacking that I might provide, a bridge so that we can get this done. Now, what that's meant for us, and I mean for us as a Joseph Smith Papers project, but I also suggest for us as Latter-day Saints, is that for the first time ever, we've had the resources to bring together a group of dedicated men and women, archivists and historians, that could work as a team to get our arms around the documentary heritage of the founding of the Restoration.
Larry had a unique way of seeing the big picture. He could see the beginning from the end in almost everything he did, and he could cut out all of the unnecessary fluff or minutia or whatever it was that might get in the way from seeing it. He was quite spiritual, and I think once he had the idea and it came to fruition and he started serving Joseph by bringing his material to light so that the masses could have it, we learn to love by serving. And I think that's what hooked him. That really brought it to his heart. And it gave him a closeness. You know, the more we know about somebody, the closer we feel.
The more I know about Joseph, the more I come to love him, come to understand him, and the more convinced I am that he was absolutely who he said he was.
Our first product, the first volume of the journals series, covering the journal of Joseph Smith, the journal that had been prepared by our scholars, covering the years of Joseph's life from 1832 to 1839, came out in 2008. We were anticipating a feature of enthusiasm for the volume, but it was the case that the first volume of the Joseph Smith Papers exceeded our expectations almost exponentially. At the beginning of the year 2010, over 50,000 copies had been sold. Unheard of in documentary editing circles. The second volume of the Joseph Smith Papers was published in September of 2009, the first of our Revelations and Translations volume. And at the beginning of 2010, 25,000 copies of that volume were purchased. It has been quite astonishing, the enthusiasm that by the Latter-day Saints and the scholarly community that has been given to the Joseph Smith Papers.
One might ask, what is the status of the Joseph Smith Papers project? With the KJAS program coming to an end, there may be questions in the minds of interested people about the future of the Joseph Smith Papers project. And I'd just like to offer the assurance that the church is squarely behind this project. And we have worked out a schedule that we hope will see us publishing the volumes that we contemplate over the next 10 to 13 or 14 years. We're going to produce an enhanced website, which is really where scholars like to go because of the searchability of the information that's there. And the fact that we're ending this wonderful KJAS program now, and I really would like to express appreciation to everyone who's made this possible, is merely an indication that we've had to prioritize our resources. And the people that have been helping produce this program are going to be helping produce volumes and content for the website that will be enhanced. So there's, I think, a very bright future for what we've started, even better than our past. We've got a number of volumes that are in progress, in the pipeline, so to speak. And I think in coming years, we're going to be able to meet our anticipation of publishing 2 to 3 volumes of the papers each year.
There is a price an expenditure, a cost in purchasing these volumes, and we admit that it is prohibitive for the full range of many people to purchase these. Our leaders in church history, the brethren, have determined that that is not going to be a factor in accessibility to this important information, and so we are emphasizing a website, josephsmithpapers.org, wherein the material that we produce in letterpress book form will end up on our website. Indeed, much more than what we produce in published book form will end up on the website that will be available to everybody worldwide. We'll be able to do things on the web that we just can't do in printed book form. And the rollout for that, for the initial part of that, will be in the summer of 2010.
So as you've heard, the project will go on. But what of the Millers' involvement from here?
We had witnessed Gail Miller's enthusiasm for this project all along. There was not only no hesitancy, but she became a constant and a major advocate for what we were doing. But there was a question. It was a difficult economic time at the time Larry passed away. Would the family continue to support the project and to underwrite this, especially as we expanded the project and thereby lay claim on even greater resources? And she not only was constant, but was exactly where Larry was when he passed away. And the family enthusiastically supports this project to this day.
Well, Gail is a person who does not like the limelight. She's much less expressive outwardly than I am, but she has a very strong testimony of the church in general, but of Joseph as a prophet as well. And she's had experiences, some on her own and some with me, where we have felt strongly that Joseph needs to have all of his story told that can possibly be told.
Well, my feelings about the project are very much aligned with Larry's, that it is a project whose time has come, and I think that it's something that really has to be brought to completion, and whatever we can do as a family to continue to support and make sure that that happens, we're certainly interested and more than willing to do.
There's a fierce loyalty that that a number of us have to him and to his family, for what they have done to not only accommodate us and underwrite what we're doing today, but in what they're doing for us as a people, for our heritage, for our history.
So many times, being involved with Larry was, you could say it was a lot of things, but you could never say it was dull. He certainly had a way of living life large and doing things that counted. And I feel privileged to have been a part of that.
The more that's understood about Joseph, the clearer it is that he was exactly who he said he was. And on that basis, we feel that the nature and character of the man not only can stand up to truth and light, but will be that he will come forth in millions of people's minds who otherwise might have questioned, might have been on the fence. And that's the reason we feel this project is so important.
You've been listening to the Joseph Smith Papers here on the Mormon Channel, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.